Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, dear saints, and welcome to another broadcast of Reformation News. We are here in studio today to present to you our 10th proposition. We have been presenting to you, our dear and faithful listenership, a contemporary 95 thesis in order to deal with the corruptions and the perversions and the abuses and the malpractices that are rampant in our churches today. And all because some African American ministers opened the door and allowed Satan to introduce his latest Trojan horse, called episcopacy. You know, the church was well insulated and well protected from episcopacy. According to all the reports and according to all of the archives and all of the documentation and all of the websites, until four men in the black church decided to open the door to Satan and introduce Satan's perversion of the bishopric. And that perversion is the monarchical bishopric, the king bishop. You see, it wasn't good enough to be a serving bishop. it wasn't good enough to have the King of Kings and Lord of Lords be the singular head of the church. No, no, no. Men wanted what Christ had. Men wanted what Christ had and were not entitled to, because since Christ paid the ultimate price, and since we have been redeemed with his blood, God has given him a name and a title that is above every name and every title, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow and every tongue confess that he's Lord. But there were some men in the church who are not satisfied with God's version of the bishopric. And so they decided, since God's bishopric was too bland and carried no glory other than the glory of service, other than the glory of having served Christ and his people, since it carried no worldly glory and no worldly accolades and carried no worldly titles and no chief seats in the temple, four men decided that they were going to alter episcopacy, that they were going to give God's episcopacy a makeover, and they bought into Satan's version of episcopacy, which comes with all of the worldly entanglements. That's what happened, folks. And so here we are. We are going to present proposition number 10. And I want to thank you for all of your emails. I want to thank you for thanking me for the great work that you all feel that I am doing. And to God be the glory. To God be the glory. It is for, you know, it's for such a time as this. It is for such a time as this that God would have me do what he's called me to do. Because we're in the end times. We are being inundated with heretical teachings. And we need to push back. And so I'm going to give it my all. I'm going to give it my best. I'm going to give the Lord everything I've got, and then let's see what he does with it. As well as there are many, many, many other discernment ministries just like this one who are earnestly contending for the faith. So it's a team effort. There are many of us who are on the front lines pushing back, telling Satan we're not going to cede him an inch of ground of territory. So I want to thank you for your emails, but listen, the best way to thank me is to tell other people about the broadcast, to tell them to tune in so that they can arm themselves with the truth. That's what we want here. We are not running a popularity contest. It's nice to know that people appreciate what you do. It's nice to know that people appreciate academia. It's nice to know that people appreciate a well-presented broadcast. Yes, we feel good about that because we work hard at doing just that. But I would get a greater satisfaction if you told 10 or 20 people about the broadcast and showed them how to tune in. And if you would help me turn them on to the truth, that's the greater satisfaction, that we can grow this audience. Because if we grow the audience, then we can grow the Reformation forces that we need for the pushback. We need people whose eyes have been opened and whose hearts are sensitive to the will of God, to join us in pushing back against this devilish encroachment. And Satan is, he's making tremendous inroads into our churches. So, yes, the best way you can thank me, the best way, and I do appreciate the emails. Don't get me wrong, I do appreciate them. But the best way you can thank me is, tell 10 other people, tell 20 other people, show them how easy it is show them how easy it is to tune into this broadcast on the internet. Just show them. Don't tell them about it. Say, look, let me show you. Let me grab your phone. Let me show you how easy it is. Get them turned on and get them tuned in to Reformation News. I also want to remind you that every Friday we have these outstanding broadcasts. And yesterday we had another outstanding broadcast because my co-host, my colleague in the ministry, Sister Marie was in studio as she is every Friday. And she just blesses us with a ton of information on current news in the church. And one of the things that she exposed us to that we were not aware of is that there are legislators and politicians all throughout the United States working on muzzling us, and when I say us, the church, working on eliminating free speech, working on getting us not to preach the gospel. And so this is happening all over the place. This has already taken root in England. You can't say boo in England and not expect to get arrested. It's just the way it is. It's the way it is over there in England. And I love England. I mean, if there were another place that I would love to live in, it's England. I would move there in a heartbeat. The country's beautiful. The people are beautiful. The history, oh, what a country rich in history. It's the one country in the old country that I would love to live in. I would love to live in England. London is wonderful. Like any other city, it has its sin, of course. But England is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. It is famous for its parks. Wow, I mean, you talk about greenery in England. There's greenery everywhere. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So it's already there. They've already muzzled. They've already silenced the English preachers, those who want to say something, because there's a lot of them who don't want to say a thing. But to those who want to be outspoken and preach out against sin, they've already been muzzled. And if you try to preach Jesus as the only way, you're going to jail. You're going to jail. So it's already in England. They've silenced the church, and that same nonsense is coming here. And by the way, they've already silenced the church here, because if you're a member of any church, if you're a member of any one of these churches that has one of these bogus bishops, tyrannical, despotic bishops, one of these pharaonic bishops, one of these Nimrodic bishops, I didn't say neurotic, I said Nimrodic, like Nimrod. If you have a bishop like that, oh, you cannot say anything against the so-called Lord's anointed. You cannot have a dissenting opinion. You can't speak your mind. You can't. Because then you would be touching the Lord's anointed. You would be disrespecting the mand of God. Such baloney. Such baloney. Such baloney. But, you know, you're muzzled in your local church. And if there's a cause, and if there's a reason, because we're not all zombies, we have a right to speak our minds as long as it's biblical. We have a right to demand answers. But no, you can't. Because then you would get an army of people attacking you. The bishop doesn't need to attack you. He's already got people zombified who will attack you on their own, you on your own. They will put you on the place on their own. He doesn't need to give them an order. They've already been discipled on how to silence people. And they are fiercely loyal to the mand of God. Fiercely loyal. Loyal to a fault. They're running cults. They're operating cults. That's what they're doing. Well, let's read Proposition 10. Let us read Proposition number 10, which states, and each one of these broadcasts is a singular proposition, a singular bullet point, a singular thesis, in which we are trying to give you this proposition so that you can read it and reread it and ponder it and discuss it and debate it. And we have 95 of these in total that are coming down the pike. This is number 10. That means we need to give you another 85 additional bullet points. And they're coming. They're coming. And they are all addressed to the Joint College of African American Bishops. That's who we are addressing them to. Yes, they're addressed to you, the layperson. But it is the members of the Joint College of African American Bishops that we want to hear from. That's who we want to hear from. So let me present to you proposition number 10. It states, further proof that the members of the Joint College of African American Bishops enjoy succession from ancient Babel and persist in operating in a state of perpetual spiritual confusion can be seen in the fact that this man-made organization seeks to imitate not only the Romish Church, but also the Anglican Church, or Via Media, or Middle Path Church, who has as its constitutional head the British monarch. So let me read that again. Further proof, we're giving you additional proof, that the members of the Joint College of African American Bishops enjoy succession from ancient Babel, persist in operating in a state of perpetual spiritual confusion, because that's what Babel is, can be seen in the fact that this man-made organization seeks to imitate not only the Romish Church, but also the Anglican Church, known as, in Latin, the Via Media, which is in English translated the Middle Path Church, who has, this Middle Path Church does, as its constitutional head, the British monarch. Now, let us consider the fact, let's talk about the Anglican Church. Well, the Anglican Church, again, is a man-made institution. We can argue that it was Henry VIII, who started what we call the present-day Anglican Church. The present-day, what is known as the present-day Anglican Church, was started by Henry VIII. What happened with Henry VIII? Well, Henry VIII was married. He was the king of England. He was married. And he wanted a divorce. So he wrote to the Pope and said, Mr. Pope, can you please give me a divorce? And the Pope replied, no, we're not going to give you a divorce. Now, the reason why Henry VIII wanted a divorce was because he was itching, he was lusting, he was desirous to marry a much younger, a much beautiful woman whom he had set his eyes on. And as the King of England, it's good to be the king. The king gets what the king wants. In this case, he turned to the King of Rome, the Pope, and the Pope said, no, I'm not going to give you your letter of divorce. So what did King Henry VIII do? King Henry VIII severed ties with the Roman Catholic Church, he says, you're out of here. I'm taking over, and I'm establishing the Church of England. And since the Pope is the head of the Church of Rome, I'm going to be the head, the adulterer, mind you, he's an adulterer. The adulterer is going to be the head of the Church of England. So he got his bishop now, because now he's the head. So the bishop gave him a letter of divorce, and then Henry VIII went and got remarried, divorced and remarried. Those are the beginnings of the current day Church of England. That's in a nutshell. And don't give me that the Church of England was established by Augustine. Don't give me that baloney. Okay? Don't give me that lie. Okay, so now currently as the Church of England stands, currently, the British monarch, when you read the Constitution of the Church of England, the British monarch is the actual head of the Church of England. Now, they changed the language recently to say, instead of head, they changed the language and they said, now, the Queen is the supreme governess. The supreme governess, right? But what's the difference between supreme governess and head? None. So they're using words to really cover up what the real deal is, which is the Queen of England is the supreme head. It is the spokesperson for the Church of England. And she's not going to give up that right. And whoever takes over for her, when Queen Elizabeth II dies, when she dies, the next British monarch will become the supreme head of the Church of England. That's one. So like the Roman Catholic Church, the Queen of England has a human head. When you consider Colossians, we looked at some scriptures yesterday in the book of Ephesians. When you consider Colossians, for example, let me just afford you a few scriptures concerning the book of Colossians and Christ being the head of the church. Now, are you ready to write these down? Okay. Christ is the head of the church according to Colossians 1:18. According to Colossians 2:18 and 19, Christ is the head of the church. So let's read those. Colossians 1:18 and Colossians 2:18. And we've already read the Ephesian scriptures to prove once again that Paul taught without any reservation that Christ is the head of the church. So Colossians 1:18, because we like to prove things by the scriptures. The scriptures are our final and only authority. So in Colossians 1:18, Paul says, and he, referring to Christ, is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence. For it pleased the Father that in him, Christ, should all fullness dwell. So again, Colossians 2:18, who is the head of the body? Christ. And what's the body? The church. It's clear as day. Now, in Colossians 2:18, it says, let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and the worshiping of angels, intruding into those things which intruding into those things which he have not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind, and not holding the head, from which all the body, by joints and bands, having nourishment ministered, and knitted together, increase it with the same increase of God. So who's the head here in Colossians 2:18? Christ is the head of the church. That's clear. In fact, the word head in verse 19 is capitalized. It's speaking of a person, capital H-E-A-D, the head, referring to Christ. The head is a person, the sovereign person in the church. That's the head. And the head, according to Colossians 1:18, is Christ. So any church that has a human being as their head, because remember, Christ is the God-man. That refers to his hypostatic union. How God, the mystery, how God and man were fused together. The hypostatic union. So now, the Pope is not Christ. He cannot be the head of the church, but he is the head of the Romish church. And the Queen of England is not Christ, but she is the head of the British church, or the Church of England, or the Anglican church. So notice. These bishops, these members who make up the Joint College of African American Bishops, are so confused because they choose to be in alliance under the authority and imitate two churches, the Romish Church, the Church of Rome, the Papal Church as we know it, and the Anglican Church, or the Church of England, or the British Church. The Church of England has at its head the Queen, or the British monarch, whether it be a male or a female. So whoever is the British monarch, that person constitutionally is the head of the Church of England, or as they have just, you know, they worked on it so that people can be a little deceived. Now she's called not the head, but they changed her to supreme governess. And if her son takes over, or her grandson, then that person will be called supreme governor of the church. Supreme now. So not just governor, but supreme. No mention of Christ whatsoever. Now, the second reason why we reject the Church of England is because, who wants the Queen of England to run their life? I mean, she runs her husband's life, she runs her son's life, she runs her grand, and those people are all miserable. She runs their life, and they're miserable. So what minister wants a woman who's made other men miserable to run them? But that's what you get when you get the Church of England. So here's the second thing. The Church of England is governed by a document called canon law. Canon law. Well, you may say the 39 articles. Okay, the 39 articles plus canon law. But it's really canon law. All the get-ups and the days and what they do, it's all by canon law. Now, we Christians love canon of Scripture. The canon of Scripture means that the Bible alone is a rule for faith and life. Now, in the Anglican Church, they have Scripture and they have canon law. And when you can see them in operation, you can actually see that they're not really relying too much on Scripture, but they're relying mainly on canon law to run the church. That is, canon law is the source of their doctrine. So notice, it's man-made rules. Man-made rules is what really governs them, man-made rules. And the head of the church is the Queen of England. But then also, the Church of England, the Anglican Church, is also called the Via Media, or the Middle Way Church. In other words, it's the church that is sitting on the fence. It doesn't want to offend Catholics. It doesn't know. We want to be tight. We want to be in with the Catholics, but we also want to be in with the Protestant churches. So we're going to be the middle church. We like the middle ground. In other words, we're the compromisers. We're the ones who compromise. In other words, we're the unequally yoked church. We're going to take some Reformed principles. We're going to take some Protestant principles and we're going to hold on to them. But then also, we want to keep our covenant. We want to keep our ecumenical membership card with Rome. So we're going to keep some Catholic things. So it's known as the Middle Way Church, the Middle Way. In other words, remember when Jesus said to the church, he says, I wish that you were either hot or cold, but because you're lukewarm, I will spew thee out of the mouth. Well, the Anglican church is the lukewarm church. It's the kind of church Jesus just wants to spit out of his mouth. Why? Because they're neither here nor there. It's like the Anglican church is like a woman who wants to have two husbands or a man who wants to have two wives. Now, you know you can't keep both wives happy, and you know you can't keep both husbands happy. Jesus put it this way. He says, you can't love God and mammon. You will either hate one and love the other, or despise one and adore the other. But you cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve Rome. You can't. Listen, you're not going to be able to keep Rome happy, and you're not going to be able to keep the Reformed Church happy. Why? Because you're playing them both. You're like a spiritual Mormon trying to have two wives. So, in its own documents, Anglicanism, the Anglican Church, embraces as a badge of honor this title of the Middle Way. The Middle Way. But they can't be a Middle Way. So why would you want to be part of a church that plays at both ends? Why would you be a card-carrying member of the Shepherds of Christ and also hold membership with the wolves of Satan? How can you carry? Listen, you can't be part of both clubs. You know, if you're a gang member, you got to be the member. There is no gang that's going to let you be. It's going to let you be a member of both groups. Either you work for the FBI or you work for the mafia, but you can't work for both. There's no mafia boss who's going to let somebody from the FBI in. It's called the Cosa Nostra. It's our secret. It's a secret society. That's why the FBI tries to infiltrate the mafia. That's why it tries to do it, so it can gain access and secrets and information. Because the mafia is not going to let some guy or gal be the Middle Way. And I can give you example after example. The Anglican Church wants to have a wife in Rome and a girlfriend in the Reformed Church. The Anglican Church wants to have a wife and a gumar. A gumar in Italian is, you know, side girlfriend. That's the Anglican Church. That's the Anglican Church. The Via Media, Latin. We'll keep both sides happy, but you know you can't keep both sides happy. It's an impossibility. And recently, the Anglican Church now is allowing LGBT clergy. It was a little resistant before. It was resistant. It was pushing back on LGBT clergy. But now it's permitting the recognition of LGBT clergy, and also now bishops are required in the Anglican Church to give blessings upon those who have a civil certificate of same-sex marriage. See, now you have homosexual bishops and lesbian bishops, homosexual priests and lesbian priests in the Church of England. And now you can go to a civil magistrate in England. You can get married, if you're a man, to another man. And then you can go to the church. You can go to the church and have the bishop pronounce a blessing upon your union. Now the Anglican Church is permitting sodomites in its clergy and in its laity. You see, further proof that the members of the Joint College of African American Bishops enjoy succession from ancient Babel and persist in operating in a state of perpetual confusion can be seen in the fact that this man-made organization from King Henry VIII seeks to imitate not only the Romish Church, but also the Anglican Church or the Via Media Church, the Middle Path Church, who has as its constitutional head the British monarch. Now, I want to play some audio for you. But before I do so, I want to read something out of a book. One of the worst investments I ever made. I had to purchase the book because I am studying up on these people from the Joint College of African American Bishops, and I purchased it's called a book, but really it's a pamphlet. It's a double-spaced document, incoherent document in many instances. This was written by the Metropolitan, the Primus Episcopus. This is the supreme primate of the Joint College of African American Bishops, whom we shall leave nameless because we don't want them to say that we are making these propositions personal. His book is called The Bishopric, A Handbook on Creating Episcopacy in the African American Pentecostal Church. Now, I'm just going to be brief. We have so much audio, but I just want to mention two things here. I can go on in this little pamphlet to highlight some things, but on page 41 of his book, which is actually chapter 6, he has the heading on this chapter is, if you can call it a chapter, it's called Relationships with Other Religious Bodies. And this person goes on to say, the author goes on to say, the Joint College of Bishops is Anglican apostolic by tradition. He says what? Anglican and apostolic by tradition. Now, I'm assuming Roman Catholic, right? The so-called apostolic universal Catholic Church, because that's what he does throughout the book. He talks about the Western stream and the Eastern stream. Well, if you're going via the Western stream, you're talking about the Roman Catholic Church. He says, our succession has two streams, the Western, which is the Roman Catholic, and the Eastern, okay? All righty. So now, that's on page 41. The Joint College of Bishops is Anglican / apostolic by tradition. Now, on page number 48, when he's speaking of Levitical vestments and code of dress, he writes this. The principal colors of the presiding bishop's office, it should be understood that the presiding bishop has the option of wearing any of the church's liturgical colors, such as Roman purple. Of course, when you're speaking of Roman purple, you're talking about Roman Catholic purple. And English purple. When you speak of English purple, you're talking about Anglican purple. Or black, when appropriate, but the use of the aforementioned colors is to be reserved for the apostolic office. So here on page 48, he talks about the colors of the presiding bishop of this organization, which he can pick when he looks into his closet, when he opens his closet door and he looks at all of his effeminate wear, because that's what these robes are. These robes are just effeminate wear. When you look at it, he's got an option of wearing Roman purple or English purple, Romish purple or Anglican purple. You see? So, again, and we don't want to spend too much time, because when you read the website of the Joint College of African American Bishops, they just tell you over and over and over. They just put it in your face. I mean, how many pilgrimages do they need to make to go to Rome to tell us that they're in bed with the Pope? And how many times do they need to go to England and participate in Anglican services to let us know that they're in bed with the Anglicans? So, here is an Anglican minister telling us that when people look at the Anglicans, they consider them to be Catholic light. Let's listen. It's only 2 minutes. It's a 15-minute video, and the video is entitled, "Is Anglicanism Catholic Light?" And you can listen to all 15 minutes in your own leisure. I'm just going to play the first 2 minutes.
One of the things that people often say when they come to Good Shepherd is, well, this is Catholic light. And I think one of the reasons they say that is because from the outward appearances, it does sometimes look like a Roman Catholic service. I'm wearing vestments. I have a collar. The communion table has hangings on it. It looks very much like what you might expect if you were to go to a Roman Catholic church. And if you grew up in that tradition, you probably feel like you're back home in some ways. And also, you know, we read our prayers from a liturgy that is printed in a bulletin, and we don't have a loose form of worship. It's very structured. And so people sometimes come to the conclusion this is either a Catholic church or something very much like it. Anglicans have sometimes been called Catholic light for that reason. And so I thought what I want to do.
You see, and he's admitting to that. Anglicanism, Catholic light. And he's going to try to make the argument and say no, but I just played a minute. I just played a minute, and you can see where he's telling you, yeah, I mean, you can't tell the difference. You just can't. In fact, if you were Catholic and you came to an Anglican church and sat in a service, you would feel at home. Here it is again.
One of the things that people often say when they come to Good Shepherd is,
Good Shepherd just happens to be the parish that he's the pastor of.
Well, this is Catholic rite, and I think one of the reasons they say that is because from the outward appearances, it does sometimes look like a Roman Catholic service. I'm wearing vestments. I have a collar. The communion table has hangings on it. It looks very much like what you might expect if you were to go to a Roman Catholic church, and if you grew up in that tradition, you probably feel like you're back home in some ways. And also, you know, we read our prayers from a liturgy that is printed in a bulletin, and we don't have a loose form of worship. It's very structured, and so people sometimes come to the conclusion this is either a Catholic church or something very much like it.
There you have it. And like I said, the video is called, Is Anglicanism Catholic Light? You can listen to him for 15 minutes. I did. He didn't convince me. He tried to make some arguments. But the reality is that when Henry VIII severed the church, the Roman Catholic Church that was in England from the Roman Catholic Church in Rome, he persisted in wanting the Church of England, his church, the church that now he had hijacked from Rome, he wanted that church to remain Catholic in everything, except that now he was the head of the church and not the Pope. That's all. That's the only difference. So check it out, Anglicanism, Catholic light, and you make the determination. And I have, and yeah, it is Catholic light. All right. So now, we've already covered all the things. We've already stated that the Roman Catholic Church has a human head. The Anglican Church has a human head. Well, the Roman Catholic Church is governed by canon law, and the Anglican Church is predominantly governed by canon law. We've already talked about how the LGBT community is gaining acceptance in the Anglican Church, where the clergy. See, in the Roman Catholic Church, they won't admit that the clergy is gay. They won't admit it, but they have gay clergy. And they have pedophilic clergy. The Anglican Church says, look, we're not gonna have the problems that Rome has. We're just gonna let these guys be gay. They can just affirm it. We have gay and lesbian bishops, and we're going to be affirming gay and lesbian same-sex marriages. Now we won't marry them. They can go to a civil magistrate and get married. But when they come to the church, we will pronounce a blessing. So what the heck is the difference? You're letting the civil magistrate marry them, but when they come to church, you're pronouncing blessings. What's the difference? None. There is no difference. Cowards. See, the via media. So now, I want to play some audio for you because I want to show you that even when you give people what they want, even when you go worldly, even when you go carnal, the church will die. The church doesn't grow. And the Anglican Church has been worldly for many, many, many years. Many years. Now, here is a video entitled "The New Church of England Emerges in the Old Country." A new Church of England emerges in the old country. You'll find this interesting because the Church of England is dying. Now, I don't understand why the Joint College of African American Bishops, knowing that both these churches have two heads and the head is not Christ, knowing that these two churches are dying because you go to a Roman Catholic Mass, the church is empty. You go to an Anglican church service, the place is empty. There's no life there. Because tradition kills. Now these black preachers want to bring the same tradition, the same church-killing traditions into the church. So what do you think is going to happen to the black church? It's going to die. That the Anglican church that these dopes want to imitate. Well, when I look into my closet, I have a hard choice today because I have two. I can pick the Roman purple or the Anglican purple. Oh my goodness, which one shall I choose? Which one? So here is this clip. It's not long. It's only 4.5 minutes. But I think you would find it interesting that the church in England is dying and dying fast. And this is what they're doing to survive. Here it is.
Tucked away in England's magnificent landscape lies the small village of Peterchurch. At the annual Crafts Fair, the Anglican Church bustles with activity. But this kind of church could become an endangered species, in part because of changing demographics as people migrate to the city. A Church of England report shows more than half of its churches are in rural areas, although only 17% of the population lives there. This means smaller congregations, fewer resources, and a bleak future, given the average age of attendees hovers around 55.
A lot of it is about the demographics. But also, you know, we have to be realistic. Secularization amongst the indigenous population. There's no two ways about that.
You see, secularization or worldliness. See, this lady hit it. She says, yeah, people are moving to the city, but it's more like secularization. See, they become worldly. They become secular. The Englishman, the Englishwoman has become secularized. Worldly, carnal.
In the diocese serving Herefordshire, England's most sparsely populated county, there are over 400 Anglican churches, most hundreds of years old, historic landmarks worth saving. The report offers some proposals, such as festival churches, which would only open on special days like Christmas and Easter.
Closing, locking that door for the bulk of the year will be a sad day. However, one has to be realistic and looking at it the other way. It's jolly hard to keep, maintain, pay the bills on historic buildings.
This 3,000-year-old yew tree has certainly seen a lot of change over the years in this English village, and its church, dating back to the 8th century, has found a way to keep up with the changing times.
When this church was built, this area would have belonged to the people of the village. So this was the center of the community. We've lost that over the years, and the church has become more and more a sort of sacred space only, though only the special few can go into. That is what we are trying to reverse.
The answer came from the government and an opportunity to use the church's size to help with its Every Child Matters program. But there would need to be an extensive makeover.
The inside of the church was quite cold and damp and dark. And not very uplifting.
Their mission, update the church while keeping its history. A four-year process led to an award-winning design welcoming villagers for more than church services.
But our architect said, stand in the middle of the nave and turn and look at the new section. That's the vision of the future, but it's very important to still turn and look to the traditional part of the church and marry the two together in the middle.
The beauty of the church.
In other words, they have a Starbucks in there, because I'm watching the video. They have a Starbucks, and then they have a bazaar. It's like a flea market. And that's what they've turned it into. A Starbucks and a flea market. That's what the Via Media gives you. That's what the middle way. When you wanna please God and you wanna please Mammon, that's what happens.
It's maintained. It's sort of ancient beauty, and then there's a sort of contemporary beauty as well. There were one or two perhaps who still would rather the pews, but in the main, people have just seen that instead of it being used for an hour on a Sunday morning, it's now used right through each and every day.
St. Peter's Center offers everything from senior events to yoga classes and the bell tower.
Yoga classes, Kundalini. I mean, they're inviting the serpent spirit. It's a senior center. It's a senior center so that the seniors can go in there and play bingo. And then it's a yoga center so the demonic spirit can attach to your back. And give you the power of the serpent, because that's what yoga is. Yoga means yoked. You're getting yoked to a demon. Now let's hear what they did with the bell tower.
Peter's Center offers everything from senior events to yoga classes, and the bell tower now doubles as a branch of the local library.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, at the moment the main library in the city is closed for refurbishment or something. So the fact that we've got a county library in the village and yet in the city they haven't got it at the moment, it's amazing.
When craft vendor Caroline Gilbert moved her young family here, St. Peter's caught her attention with its parent toddler group.
It's a beautiful building, and for a bit small village it takes half an hour to get a big town. It's great to have the facilities.
when we reopened, one of the children was out in the playing field out there and said to some other kids, come into our church, it's great. I think it's basically much more welcoming now.
While the Church of England acknowledges there's no one-size-fits-all solution, they see St. Peter's as a model of success, making the future brighter than before. John Jessup, CBN News, in Peter Church, England.
There you go. Turn the church into a community center. There's no preaching going on there. There's no preaching Christ. That's what happens when you have a human head. Now, here's another one. The Church of England en route to extinction. The Church of England en route to extinction. Let's listen to this one. And again, folks, this is what happens. This is what happens when you have a human head. You go to a Roman Catholic Mass. I mean, I went to pay my respects to my aunt who passed away, who was Roman Catholic. So I went with the family. I stepped into a Roman Catholic church. And let me tell you something. My aunt, who was in the casket, was more alive. My aunt, who was in the casket, was more alive than that mass. I'm telling you. Can you imagine that? Here it is. Church of England en route to extinction. The Anglican Church.
For the British monarchy, the Church of England has been a symbol of the UK for centuries. And while the church still enjoys many unique political and financial privileges, its current state is less than secure, as our Archie Polly Boyko finds out.
One of the most religiously diverse nations in the world, with one official state religion. To some, it's a paradox.
I think any faith institution like the Church of England is going to have some potential threats on the horizon. And those threats on the horizon are basically around its relevance to communities in general. Other faiths are significantly growing in their not only population, but their voice in a social and political level. So it's really important to have a plurality of opinion rather than just focus on one institution as being reflective of the nation.
Yet, the National Church has 26 unelected members in the House of Lords, the upper house of Britain's Parliament, and it enjoys financial privileges, courtesy of the UK taxpayer.
By the Church's own admission, the number of people coming through the doors of this and every other church in England has halved over the past 40 years. The very same report even warns that in the longer term, the established religion faces fading away to virtual irrelevance. 20 Anglican churches, just like this one, are being closed down for worship each year. Entrepreneurial property developers are snapping them up and converting them to luxury housing or even nightclubs.
While the number of churchgoers in the UK continues to fall, some 100,000 Britons have converted to Islam over the past decade. Three-quarters of those, white women.
And as I, you know, broadened my knowledge about Islam and compared it with Christianity, I must tell you, I found it more logical. You know, it just resonates with me. I liked what the Prince of Wales said, that he wants to be, if ever he becomes king, he wants to be the leader of faith, you know, of all faiths. That, I think, is a wonderful statement, because certainly our society here in Britain is very multicultural and very multi-faith, so everybody should be included.
While other faiths enjoy popularity, the Church of England's recent rejection of women bishops and disapproval of gay marriage has reignited the age-old debate on the separation of church and state.
Now, let me interject here. This is an old video, so they folded. When it came to women bishops, they folded, and now they have women bishops. When it came to same-sex marriage, they folded. And now they approve, or at least they give the blessing to, same-sex couples, and now they have openly gay bishops.
People feel alienated if they're not part of that church, and so few people are, because only 2% go to church on a normal Sunday. So that's why we must, I think, make sure that the church is disestablished, and the 26 bishops that vote in the House of Lords, the only country in the world to have a parliament where they have the right to do that, should be extinguished.
Britain now has one of the lowest rates of church attendance in Europe.
There is a rural-urban split in terms of religious opinions. There is, and that will grow. And that fissure may actually become wider as time goes on. And so I guess what we have today is the church effectively being relevant to certain parts of this country.
Despite centuries of tradition, some question what will be left of the Church of England in 50 years' time.
Oh, the statistics are very clear. Almost disappeared. With something, I think the 2050 figures are 100,000 people in their pews on an average Sunday out of a population of 60 million. That's minuscule.
But the privileges and political influence afforded to it are far from trivial. And that's what's fueling the calls of those who say that it's fairer to separate the church from the state. Polly Boyko, RT, London.
Well, they're not going to separate because these bishops love the money. See, they have prostituted themselves. Simple as that. And the queen will not shut down the churches. Why? Because what is she going to be the head of? I mean, she's the head, really, of the nation and of the Church of England. I mean, she enjoys sovereignty. If you eliminate the Church of England, then that cuts her power. And don't tell me how power is constitutional. Don't tell me that she operates a constitutional out of a system that presents a constitutional monarchy. Don't give me that baloney. There you have it. There you have it. And so now these bishops over there at the Joint College of Bishops, they affirm that they are an institution that is Anglican apostolic by tradition, Anglican and Roman. That's why the chief prelate, his biggest problem when he gets up in the morning, when he opens his closet door, his biggest decision of the day, his biggest decision is, should I put on my Roman purple shirt or my English purple shirt? Again, I close with the proposition. Think of this. Here it is. Further proof that the members of the Joint College of African American Bishops enjoy succession from ancient Babel and persist in operating in a state of perpetual spiritual confusion can be seen in the fact that this man-made organization seeks to imitate not only the Romish church. Oh, how these black bishops want to be like the Romish bishops. Oh, they mimic them. They can't get enough of canon law. They want to do everything that the Roman bishops do. But not only do they imitate the Roman bishops, but they also imitate the Anglican bishops, who are middle way people. And by middle way means ecumenism. That's the focus. Let's come together and let's just sing Kumbaya. Don't attack anybody. Don't talk about their doctrine. We all have our different reformations and traditions. You see, this is why you know that the – and all you have to do is – and I don't recommend that you spend the $20 in getting this dopey book, The Bishopric, a handbook on creating episcopacy in the African-American Pentecostal Church. I mean, when I saw this online, I said, okay, this is going to be something I can sink my teeth into and really – And when, like I said, when I was looking for the package, I almost missed it. It was so thin, it was like a cardboard. I opened it up, and I couldn't believe that I was looking at a double space typed document made up of 97 pages that if you remove the double spacing, it goes down to 45 pages, 50 pages, and I got ripped off. This is a $20 book with shipping. I got ripped off. When you order Jackass Church Bishops from us, that's 200 pages. When you order Nehushtan Church Bishops, that's close to 300 pages. Those are books with footnotes. This book didn't have a footnote. I mean, if this was submitted as a thesis at a doctoral level, I would have thrown this in the garbage. The writing here. And when it comes to reading comprehension, I'm a pretty good guy with reading. I mean, this is mush. This is Episcopal mush. There's a few things in here that you can make sense of, but this is Episcopal mush. Mush! Slop! And all it does is it reaffirms that they have copied over there at the Joint College of Bishops. They are copying two organizations that are going into extinction. Two churches going into extinction. While Islam is on the rise, while Islam is on the rise all over the globe, Roman Catholicism is dying. Dying. You go to, like I said, I went to the mass. My aunt was Catholic. I wanted to be with my cousins as they were weeping and crying, and the loss of a mother is a great loss. My aunt, who was in the coffin, embalmed, stiff and cold, was more alive than that mass. I was asking somebody, I was praying, I said, Lord, have someone here put me out of my misery. And the thing went on and on and on. I was being tortured. I was being tortured. And you go to an Anglican church service, it's the same thing. Dead, dead, dead. That's why people don't go in England. They don't go. They don't go. Now, why did they go when Spurgeon? Why did the British people go when Spurgeon was preaching? Why did the British people go when Dr. Martin Lloyd Jones was preaching? Why did the people go to church when Bishop J.C. Ryles was preaching? Why did they go when Wesley and Whitfield were preaching? Because they were not pretentious. Not even the renowned Bishop J.C. Ryles. Not even was he pretentious. You read what that man wrote. You read his expository notes on the Gospels, and you just know from reading his tomes. I mean, his volumes are huge. You read his works, and you know that man walked with Christ. I can't get enough of Bishop J.C. Ryles. That's a bishop. A bishop indeed. But I've given you the proof now. I've given you the proof. And yet in their Magna Carta, because that's what this little pamphlet is, think about that. That's what this little weak document is, this book entitled The Bishopric, A Handbook on Creating Episcopacy. I like that, episcopacy, in the African-American Pentecostal church. I mean, you read this incoherent piece of trash, and the guy has, I mean, he writes, and he celebrates all the proofreaders and the people who read the document. I mean, they proofread this? This is their Magna Carta. I mean, this is the document from which all of these bishops, I mean, they're slobbering to get this book. I have it because I need to use it when I write on the Joint College of African American Bishops. I have it because I need to quote them. I need to quote them. That's why I have it. That's why I spent the $20. But I thought the book was going to be at least 200 pages. At least the book was going to have one footnote. Not one footnote. This is rubbish. This is garbage. And what are these bishops doing to the black church? They're introducing extinction. Because they're introducing Rome and they're introducing the Anglican church. And when you're that's a deadly combination. That's like getting injected twice with poison. Think about that. You get injected in the right arm with a dose of poison, Romish poison at that, and in the left arm you get another injection, and it's Anglican poison. And before you know it, we're calling the authorities to come pick up your body because you're dead, you're stiff. And then we're having a service for you like they just had for Eddie Long. So let me close today's broadcast with we're marching to Zion. You know why we're going to Zion? Because the King is in Zion. Our Lord is in Zion. And you know what happens when you stand in the presence of the King? When you just sit there and when he's in his glory? You know what happens? You are revived. For he said, I am the life. I am the life. I am the life. We're marching to Zion. I'll be back tomorrow with proposition number 11. Stay away. Stay away from the Joint College of African American Bishops and stay away from their churches. Stay away. Stay away. Death is permeating those churches.